Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Gonzalo, CEO of OpSeeker. Hey, Gonzalo, how's it going? Good to have you on the show today.
Hi, Richard. It's a huge pleasure. I know you're inviting some big guys in the fintech space. It's an honor to be here with you.
Cool. Sounds good. So let's kick off the show today, and maybe you can tell us a bit about yourself, a bit about your background.
Yes, of course. So I am from Spain, from a city or town called Santiago de Compostela. And despite of having not that much population, it's quite known. I'm sure you know about the Santiago's Way or path. We have this cathedral and there is a pilgrimage to it. Well, it's an interesting city because it's small, but we get a lot of pilgrims every year. So it's fun. It's a city with a big university and it's fun. I had a lot of fun growing up there. When I was 18, I left. I moved to the US and I studied there financial economics and business administration. And then after working a bit in the financial industry, I decided that it was not exactly for me, that my type of character and who I am didn't belong in those settings. However, I really loved the financial world and finances in general. So I decided to start something in relation to that, trying to improve people's financial life.
Oh, cool. Sounds like an interesting journey. And maybe on that note, you can give us a bit of a background around OpSeeker and what you guys are doing.
Yes, of course. So the idea started when I was doing a master in Paris, in ESCP Europe. I was there doing a master thesis on if wine is a good diversifier for your portfolio. And we were studying different portfolios or different regions and utilizing an index that tracks the wine price of particular wines. And in this study, and for doing this study, I needed to do like a portfolio optimizer to check some ratios like Sharpe ratio, Jensen alpha, modified value at risk, some ratios that tell you if a portfolio is good at a quantitative level. And for doing that, luckily, in my first programming class, I don't know how to program even now, of course, but in my first programming class, I met a girl, Lucy, that she was a programmer and she was doing just an exchange program with ESCP to learn French. And she was taking this class in order, well, to do some VBA basics because she wanted to have fun in France and all that. So I talked to her about this and she told me that she could help. So she built this program for me. And with this program, I got a really nice grade in my master's thesis, but we realized that this could have a commercial purpose because this could build good portfolios quantitatively, fast and cheap, and you can use just index funds to replicate them. This idea, we were talking about it in 2015. And when we started doing the due diligence, we found out that this existed already. They were called robo-advisors. And there was Betterment, Wealthfront, Nutmeg, Money on Toast, but there was none in Spain yet. The first one, I think it was born in December 2016. So we decided, okay, let's do our own model and let's try to do a robo-advisor. And that's how we started, wanting to be a robo-advisor. But we quickly changed because when we started, it was Lucy, Carlos, a friend of mine. Like I have a lot of good friends and this one is really nice because he's kind of a genius and he's an aeronautical engineer and an aerospace master's he has done. And he had gotten bored of working in the aeronautical industry, I think, because of lack of impact. You feel like you're part of something that is too big and you can don't have that much impact. So he wanted to get into coding and he self-taught himself coding and now he's a beast. So he joined as well. And we decided, okay, we want to enter this world. We need someone that has more white hair that is older than us because we were 25 and 27, something like that. Luckily, I found this person that had written a thesis that the name is The Industrialization of Financial Advice. And it was nothing more than in 2006, I think, already talking about robo-advisors, but from a governmental point of view, like institutionalized. So I went and talked to him. And when I met him, we talked about, and he said, look, I don't want to make a small bank. And that's what a robo-advisor is. At the end of the day, they're going to take the money, but he felt like they will just become commodities. And I thought he was completely right, and that what we cared more about was about the financial health of people. And he told me that for that, what mattered was the psychology of investing. And I thought he was completely right. And I had written in the CFA level 3 program that this thing about behavioral economics. And it made a lot of sense to me, because it's like, we are not rational, or no, we are not rational all the time. Most of the times we are not. And we have all these heuristics and biases that make us act in ways that are not maximizing an optimum level of utility of something. So everything clicked then. And we said, okay, so we are going to start using this behavioral economics in order to build products that help people understand the need to start investing or to have good financial habits in general. And that was mid-2016. And since then, that's what we have been doing.
Oh, awesome. And some great insights into sort of the idea, how you looked at maybe bringing a team together, and also the advice that you seeked, as you call it, with people that had maybe a bit more experience, but people with gray hair. And I mean, you touched on a few things there, but what problem are you looking to solve, well, with Opseeker?
Okay, so why we started Opseeker is because we are facing times that, depending on how we act now, we might have one of the biggest financial crises that we've ever had, with the highest impact of any of them, without considering, of course, wars and those type of situations. And this is because we are facing a world in which longevity is growing at an interesting speed, and less people are being born, especially in the Western world. And this creates a situation in which the pool of people working that are productive, that are making sure that the system works, is shrinking, while the pool of people that is consuming from that system is increasing. And in many countries, the rate or the spot where we are at is starting to get dangerous. So many systems, and well, this is a little bit technical, but this is coupled with situation in which interest rates are staying long for a really long time. And if this keeps on going like this, the pension systems cannot support it, because they have done their calculations with higher interest rates, which mean with higher returns on the investments that they have. And this is a problem, because many of these pension plans, not only public and private, will go bust in the future, which is going to add up to the snowball that is going to be created from the first problem, which is that the system is not able to make enough for the people that are already consuming from the system. So what is going to happen is that both public and private sector of the, in the pension system are going to be suffering. And who is going to suffer at the end? People that should be getting paid. It's already impossible to be 30 years or 35 years living in retirement without having something else that is not only going to be what you get from the public system, okay? For our generation already, okay? And the people that are retired now, they might be able to, okay, until they die, it's fine, good. But we are not going to be okay already, because the numbers don't add up. And the problem is that the measurements that are taken right now, many governments are really populist, so they are increasing the pensions for the people right now. And they are really messing up with our future doing that. So what is the only solution? The only solution is to start taking the proper actions right now, to start saving and investing for your future. So you say, okay, let's do it. Yes. But most people are not financial literate. They don't understand finances. And I'm talking about a huge percentage of the world, and even of the, let's say, developed world. And that's a problem, because then they don't know that they have to do this. And they think it's okay. And all our psychology is meant for us to live the moment, to live now, to have fun now, to make sure that we are having the best moment right now. So we have this that is called present bias and hyperbolic discounting, that anything that happens in the future, it's for us seeing as something way less important than what really is. So if we don't work actively in making sure that people understand that they need to right now put for the money aside for the future, it's going to be hard to make it happen. And we're going to have a generation that for the first time is going to have a worse life than their parents. Not because of a shock, but just because of demographics. And if they don't know have the financial literacy, okay, it's okay. There is a solution. let's go to the financial companies, to the financial industry, and look for help. Let them advise you, right? Well, I think there was this number coming not that long ago from a Facebook poll that says that 70% of millennials prefer going to the dentist than listening to their banks. How the heck is anyone going to go to the bank to tell them, what should I do with my money? After 2008, they lost the trust completely, completely, especially the young generations that saw their parents suffering because of what they think was something that banks made. It might be true, it might not be. There are always shades, but that's what people believe, that those ones to blame are banks. So that's the problem. The problem is that we have this three factor that is making us not being able to save for the future, because first of all, we don't have knowledge, and second, we don't trust the people that should be helping us with it. So that's why we started UpSeeker, right?
Yeah,
to be an alternative.
Yes, it's really interesting insights there, and maybe I'll pull one out. It seems, I mean, you guys obviously you're a pioneering tech company, and within that, it sounds like there's an education and maybe a mindset change that you're having to go through in order to, you know, get the product out there, get the product well received. So, how have you approached market entry, considering that?
Yes, great question, actually, and I can tell you a little bit about how has it been for us since we started till now, because we've entered, we've had to maneuver, we're entering again in some other, let's say, areas. So maybe that's the proper way to go. I just explained you a little bit of what we've done in that sense.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I guess it's a case of moving, taking a look at it, continuously evolving and measuring the sort of product vis-a-vis market fit.
100%. Like, everything is about testing, everything is about feedback loop, and everything is about measuring what is going on and taking the feel of if something is working or not. So yes. At the very beginning, we said, okay, we're going to do a B2C product. Because the first idea here is, look, there's this problem, they don't have trust, let's do something that it builds trust. Okay, that's super complex, actually.
Exactly.
That we thought that, okay, armed with our knowledge in behavioral economics and all that we are getting, we are going to be able to do it. But then we didn't know that much about the entrepreneurial world at the beginning, but then the more we got into it, we understood how hard it is in such a small market like Spain to do something like that, especially in the financial industry. And there was a point, what we did also in order to enter the market was to join acceleration programs, okay? This, I feel, that is the best thing that any fintech company can do right now if they are starting. Join acceleration programs. There are many. They are like streamlining the process of first understanding how to build a company, and secondly, talking with the right people in institutions. So if you have in any way a B2B or a B2B2C business, I really recommend acceleration programs. And I have a little bit of knowledge. We've done 8 already.
Oh, wow.
So we are really riding that wave. And I think it's interesting, more than for some of them give money and all that, that's okay. But more about opening a market that is really hard to enter, like the financial industry, especially if you don't come from an experience in it or like really they know you in it already. So breaking on it as an outsider is hard. And these programs like really help you to enter. So market entry accelerators, for me, will always be a channel in the fintech world, especially B2B, B2C, B2B2C companies. We were not one of those, right? But we didn't know how to start doing this. We needed help. So we said, okay, let's join programs that help these type of companies and that give us money so we can start doing it, because we didn't want to put our own money. So that's what we did. We joined a couple of them, one with Santander and one with Abanca. And in the Abanca one, someone said to us that we should move to B2B or B2B2C, that we should leverage on the financial institutions clients, because our mission is to really change the minds of people. They have the clients already. So maybe we can find a way by talking in another way, by using different platforms, we can actually have an impact on them that they are not having right now because they are not communicating the right way. And there's too much red tape and too much bureaucracy to change anything from the inside. And I said, I think it's a great idea. I know at the beginning, but as we were, and I was not the only one, like the whole team thought that we could do that. But it was not only because of the reason that someone told us, it's because we got in another really nice accelerator program that is called Startup Bootcamp, Fintech and Cybersecurity in Amsterdam. And the two things clicked together. And we started working there with two institutions, Rabobank and Vivat, because that program is amazing. If you put time and you give all you can have, they sit you with decision makers of like insurance companies, banks, pension funds. It's amazing. So yeah, we started there and we got some traction in Holland, and then we came back to Spain, and with like Holland has a unbelievable pension system, like with Australia and Denmark, they are some of the best pension systems in the world. So then we came to Spain with that and writing an article in Spain as Opseeker is helping Dutch youth to improve their retirement. So boom, like we started getting traction in Spain with financial institutions.
Awesome insights. And I've definitely heard a number of guests mention sort of the startup bootcamp and the good stuff that's happening there. As you guys, you know, are growing and scaling, how are you looking to balance the growth of your core business together with sort of other initiatives, i.e. maybe moving into new markets or developing out new cool products, etc.?
Yes, that's a great question, because that's what we are facing right now. And not because we are getting different lines of products now. We have like a tech consulting side that is going really well. We have B2C that we are, because after that B2C, we now realize that we want to be either B2B pure or B2C pure, not B2B2C. So we are building those three lines now. Consulting, like tech consulting, which is like behavioral economics consulting plus tech, B2B and B2C. So we are a small company. Like we're a small startup. We are not that many people. And we're already with three business lines. People might say that they are not focused. It's really hard. And I understand. And I understand that concept. And most people tell you that you need to be laser focused in one thing, don't have so many things, and try to go for it. However, there is a way of doing this when you find that not that much changes between one thing and the other. That the majority of what you are doing remains the same between those three first business lines for us, for example. And in that case, I think it's better to diversify, like when you invest. If you're able to, for a not that much of a delta of work, having other opportunities, I would go always for that. Because, okay, I know that people say, like, if you have a plan B, your plan A, life is not that easy. And we're living coronavirus times. And many people that thought like that and are not able to rethink what they are doing and try to move and find other ways of achieving what they are trying to achieve, they will die, and they are dying. So I understand that you have to be laser focused, yes. But if you can diversify and try other business lines, what you're doing, I think it's the right way to go. And then, of course, if something picks up, you need to put all your effort on that thing. Like in the moment that something starts scaling, that you find that the right product market fit, in that moment, that's when you start really putting everything behind that. And for us, that it's the moment right now, but it's happening in various lines at the same time. We are making sure that we are setting the right ground. That's the most important thing for us. Like we are building the basics, and that basis are right documentation, right understanding of processes of communication between our small team, and understanding how we're going to be scaling that, how we're going to scale communication, how people are going to enter and really fast be of use for us. So we are creating all those processes to make sure that despite we are small, we are ready to scale in no time. And that's, I think, the most important thing. It doesn't matter how much you're working in the now and how many things you're doing now, you as a CEO, you need to always be thinking about 6 months from now and where do you need to be in 6 months from now to be able to take on the type of load of work that you're going to have. And if you don't do that, I think it will be a mess. It becomes a mess because then you are not ready, and then you start hiring and you don't hire properly because you don't have the time, because you don't implement the right process of hiring, and you hire wrong. And that happens. And if that happens, then everything goes badly, and then it's harder to come and scale fast, no? So I think the preparation, while you're working to prepare everything to make sure that you are able to grow, as you say, in an orderly fashion, I think that's key.
Yeah, I think you touched on some very meaningful topics generally around, you know, business operations, getting that sorted out on a continuous basis rather than leave it to the day that something actually works out and you can really focus and double down on a business line. So people, I look at it as people, process and systems. Where are you right now? Where do you need to be in the next 6 to 12 months?
right now where we're at is at the point that, so B2C, we closed around in the middle of the pandemic. We got lucky and we have great people behind us. So we closed around in order to build this product. So we started to build this product. And we expect to have the first version in the mid of 2021 to start testing with the best first beta users. And this is a product in which you have any financial planning application in your phone or any financial tool in your phone.
I do. Actually, one of my guests pinged me over their crypto wealth management app a couple of weeks ago, which I started playing around with.
So that's a wealth management. But what about a personal finance one?
Such as
Mint.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And do you use it regularly?
I don't. I should, but I don't.
Why do you think that is?
If I'm honest with you, I rely on other people to give me background information. Good.
Fantastic. But you still think that you would like to have a place that when you go, you get exactly what you want in the terms of financial knowledge or financial advice or tricks and tips. You will still like to have that type of thing.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if I had the time and what have you, it would be great to log on and log off. Right now, I don't. I rely on my backroom staff, for want of a better word.
I understand. The thing is that for now, it's harder for you to do something than to talk to someone. In the moment that doing that something becomes easier and faster, you would do that something.
Yeah,
there we go. And that's what we're trying to do. That's exactly what we're trying to do. To make processes that are attractive, interactive, gamified, and are useful from the moment zero, without you having to do anything almost, in order to make people having a recurrent use of a personal finance tool, because I think that's right now the biggest challenge of PFMs, because they are capable of getting downloads, they are capable of getting a bit of usage, but they are not able to grow farther than that. And Mint is the best example. Mint has gotten millions and millions of downloads, but no one uses it anymore. Why? So that's what we're trying to tackle, because we think that people need it. We think people need to use these tools in order to take advantage of them and have good financial health, because if not, we're going to have a huge problem, as I was talking about before. So that's the first step, to get them to use them regularly. And we are having a different, let's say, way of tackling the problem, way more from a gamification perspective and way more from a behavioral perspective than from a finance perspective. So that's what I think is going to mark the difference if we are successful. And if it won't be us, it would be someone that tries to do something similar. Because that's the future of finance, that people are attracted and that have fun while they're doing, but they are learning while they are doing. And if in the moment that happens and someone gets with that click, that's it. That's the next thing in finance. But I don't know if it's going to be us or who's going to be. But we need to work towards that. We need to work towards using the same mentality and same techniques that the big techs have used all these years to make us use their products. We need to use them for good. And that should be the future of tech. We cannot say we need to stop Facebook to do what they do. We need to stop Apple doing what they do. Or we need to stop Google doing what they do. We need to fight them by doing the same things, but in order to nudge people to do the right thing.
Yeah. Listen, I love that you use me as a case study. And I completely agree. It took me by surprise, but it was awesome. It's completely right. I mean, me as a consumer, I'll say, yeah, you bang on there. I think these type of things, these type of apps that you guys are building, it's you know, let's get them out there. Let's get proper usage, because they're great things and great tools. I guess we started touching on what you're looking at doing over the next 12 months. We looked at the B2C side of things. What about the other lines of business?
Yeah. So in the other lines, what we've seen is that for now, and if I'm completely honest, when we are doing B2B to C businesses, we normally get paired with people from marketing, right? And if we get paired from people with marketing and we get judged with people from marketing, for them, they want to really optimize funnels, make them really short, not a lot of touch points, and make sure that people are touched and sold something, right? And that is against or antagonizes what we try to do, which is to build trust, which is to have interactivity in order to build this trust, which is like having gamification in order to build this trust. Because if we start from the premise that financial institutions are not being able to nudge people towards long-term investing, for example, is because they don't have trust. Because they already have the money of people, but they don't have their trust. So you cannot use the same techniques over and over of marketing to get their trust to build a long-term financial products. So that's why we enter, right? Mm. But then we get paired with these sides of the businesses. Then they want to try to change what we do towards something more marketing. And then it's not working that great. I have to be completely honest. It's not working that great. Because in a process that we want to last days, and it has happened a few times, we want it to last days, they want to last seconds. And I cannot build a habit or trust in seconds. Mm. And I'm not in the business of selling something fast. I'm in the business of creating trust and then selling something because they want something, not because I'm pushing it for them or trying to trick them towards buying, which I'm not saying that's what they're doing, right? Mm. But they use these techniques in order to create attraction and sell something. And they are super good at that. Like, amazing. I cannot compete with them on that. They have been their whole lives doing that.
Yeah.
But what I can compete is on building that trust.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think you touched a few things there. I mean, one standout thing is your ethics. It seems like you guys aren't willing to compromise on those, which is pretty amazing stuff, right?
That's one part. But the other part is that I am being completely honest. I don't want to compete with marketing. Like, I don't want to be using the behavioral economics in order just to make people buy something. I want them to become better consumers. That's what I want to do. And in order to do that, it's going to take more time. It's not the same competition. It's like a 100-meter dash versus a marathon, you know? And however, what happens is that if you work in this way, what is supposed to happen is that you get better customers that are not going to be changing. Like in banking happens a lot, you change a lot or people change a lot because they offer more money or they offer a better return in a particular year, or, and they are changing all the time and shopping for different banks. However, if you have a better customer because you're creating a better experience and you provided value from the beginning without asking for anything and you have that reciprocity effect, then you start having customers that are way more loyal. That is something that the industry needs, more loyal customers, because they are going to be able to treat them better and advise them better, right? That's why we're moving a little bit out of B2B to C, because we don't feel that we are aligning great. However, we do feel that we can help them with products that help their sales force to be better advisors and better planners. And they need that and they want that. So we are already working and trying to get out there some products that are more in the sense of financial planning or even tools that help prepare better for advising better these financial advisors or personal or private bankers. That we are starting to build in the B2B line. And then in the more consulting tech side, we are working with a couple of big clients. And this is amazing, because if you find the right client, and if you find a client that has, and normally it's going to be not business per se, but it's going to be maybe a financial education program from a bank or things like that. But some banks, they're starting to get really amazing at it. Like, for example, BBVA Mexico, they have a financial education program that is incredible. Incredible. And with a huge budget. So this is going to set an example for the future for what should banks do in the sense of financial literacy and financial education and financial inclusion. Because they are like moving the needle a little bit on it and understanding what they need to do and understanding the time frame of financial education and financial inclusion. Like right now we are working with them and it's amazing what we can do. It's incredible the type of work that we are starting to do there. And I think this is going to be a little bit about the future of what it's for us there to work with this type of institutions that have this type of programs that we can actually that just help a little bit to make it more behavioral, let's say. Add our tech to it.
Yeah, and you touched on some challenges, obviously, maybe sort of the marketing funnel side of things just now. What other challenges do you foresee over the next 12 months as you guys continuously or look to continuously scale and grow your business?
Well, first of all, I think we did a step back on B2B. So it's okay because we are in a way farther point with our consulting tech. And we are so excited about the B2C. So I have all the technological team working on that and they are so excited. And we think we finally understood what could work. After so much working with financial institutions, after so much time trying to see what actually clicks or not, what type of front end works, what type of biases and nudges and heuristics we use, we think we have it. And we are testing it all the time and we keep on getting good results. So we're really excited about that. So that helps a lot and adds a lot of fuel. However, it's also a challenge itself. Moving from building only products for institutions to building our own product in a mobile environment, it's something that is a challenge. It's a huge challenge that we are tackling, I think, hands-on, and I'm super proud of the team, but I didn't expect anything less of them because they are marvelous. They are incredible. Like, I got so lucky with them. It's okay to not know about things, but you need to find the right person that knows about that. And you need to have in your contact not only people that know about things, but people that know about people that know about things. And when you have that, it's okay. No challenge is going to be too big for you.
That's some really good points there. And as you sort of move forward, it sounds like you guys have gone through a very exhaustive process, which is very good to hear. But what questions are you and your team asking yourselves, and what factors are you considering as you continue and move forward on your growth trajectory? I know you've mostly mentioned a few now, but yeah, maybe summing it up.
Okay, so first of all, we had to make a decision of pursuing three different lines, which was really hard because the market tells you not to do those things. The whole ecosystem tells you not to do these type of things, but we still did it. But we don't do it, just let's just do this. We make conscious decisions about it. So this was really hard. And it was a challenge for us. And however, after talking about it, after talking it with different players, all the stakeholders that we have, we all thought the same. And even moreover, like, we had one of our acceleration programs that is called PFI, Think Forward Initiative, from ING, AWS, IBM, and Deloitte. They have great professionals that understand so much about how you should run your business, because they do it for huge corporations and for small startups and for small and medium enterprises. So I was talking with them the other day, and I was explaining, and I was expecting the worst, right? Like, it's really hard. That's not going to happen. No one does that. But no, they told me, well, you have it thought. It's going to be hard, a challenge, a lot of work, but it's possible. So as long as you're reasoning the things, don't just take what is out there in the market and say, okay, if people are telling you that startups should focus on only one thing, maybe in your case, it's not exactly like that. So I think there's a lot of degrees of gray areas that it's important that you maneuver on them and that you take advantage of those situations, because they are also at the end competitive advantages, right? And I think that that's it. Like, thinking about our competitive advantage and what we bring to the table helps you run all the other decisions. So knowing your why, your how, and your what inside and out, and that the whole company knows it, it serves as the wheel that drives you through this crazy land of entrepreneur. So we focus a lot on that. We focus a lot of why we're doing what we're doing, what's our mission, what is our vision. And I'm telling you, it is so important to have it clear, because every communication that you have with people, when things go well, when things go bad, you're always going to come back to this, and this is going to be like that wheel that allows you to write properly, to communicate the right things, to not get caught up in the moment feelings that you're experiencing. So we always focus a lot on that. Then also we think a lot about how we're going to grow the company. That's something that really, I don't know if it scares us anymore, but we are thinking a lot about, because we are a really particular startup of how we work and what we like and the responsibilities that we give to people. And not everyone is for us. So finding the way of understanding these people that we need and of being able to select them, it's hard. So we are thinking about that a lot. That's something that is a point that we are stressing a lot between us. I don't know. There's a lot of many other things, of course.
Yeah, cool. I guess we've spoken about the accelerators and your ecosystem and the stakeholders that you chat to, including some of the sort of the big consulting guys. And, you know, speaking to a lot of startup founders like yourself, people also tend to read a lot of books and articles. So in wrapping up, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you right now, what book are you reading?
So the book that I'm reading right now, the title is exactly Designing for Behavior Change, Applying Psychology and Behavioral Economics, from Stephen Wendell. But at the same time, I'm reading others because I cannot read only one book. Like, for example, I'm reading one, and not because I'm a huge fan of it, but because I think that it's interesting some points that they make about PNL. And then I'm reading one that is called, I have it in Spanish, so I don't know how it's called in English, but it's called Magical Moments from Chief Heath and Dan Heath. So yeah, I'm reading all books about how to create experiences, how to make people want to do something. I'm just trying to learn as much as I can from behavioral economics, despite of all that I've done already. I feel always that I'm behind and that I need more. I also have here the Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion from Cialdini, and that I check a few times now and then. Hooked as well, which is how to build products that hook you. So all these type of books have in my desk.
I love it. And as we close out the show, and how can people find and connect with you and the guys at Opseeker?
Through email is great. My email is gonzalo@opseeker.com. And you can get all our info in Opseeker, www.opseeker.com. And if you contact us, we will be more than happy to talk about anything. If you want help with your startup or ideas about what you're doing, some people think that you should do students share your ideas because then people can copy. I'm completely against that. And we all have 100 of ideas, and almost no one in the space is going to try to copy your idea. What they are going to do is help you to and tell you if you can do something with it, in their opinion, of course. And what matters is not that much ideas, which are important, but execution is what really pays the bills. So don't be scared of sharing ideas. And we do the same. Like, as I said, I was speaking about a product that is not yet launched. We are just starting to build it. We are not scared that anyone is going to copy because we understand how many degrees of freedom are when you're building a product, right? That's something I wanted to say, that it's good that people share and get information, because at the end, what you're doing is a little bit increasing your team and having more of a collective mind helping you to build that. And for us, has been crucial. Crucial to listen to so many people from so different walks of life.
A brilliant wrap up there. And thanks for giving us a glimpse into your world. It's been really insightful, and I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today.
I really enjoyed it. Like, with these things, I feel I'm talking too much about me and about us and about what we're doing, but I guess that's the point. But I'm not normally like this. Normally I talk about other things. So just to let you know.
I'm sure you definitely do talk about it. It's been an amazing insight into how you guys are approaching getting your product into consumers' hands. And it's refreshing to hear that you're taking a slightly different approach to maybe some others, which is cool.
Well, thank you very much for everything. And it was a pleasure being with you. And for whatever you need, I'm here to talk or whatever you need.
Speak soon, mate. Cheers.
Cheers.